Brokaw Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Alderman Brendan Riley is with us. It's Tuesdays with Brendan. And, okay, a couple things. We need Texas senators telling us what to do, do we?
No, we don't.
No.
I thought the mayor put him in his place rather nicely today.
All right. Have you ever heard that expression before?
Keep our name out of your mouth.
Have you ever heard that expression before?
I haven't.
I don't think I have either.
I have.
You have.
I have.
What circumstances were
exactly
context?
Like that? Like if you mention somebody.
In your lane.
Yeah, it's basically stay in your lane. Keep my name or keep that name or keep her name or keep his name out of your mouth.
Like you're not allowed to talk about
right.
us.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Says me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
She scared me, though. I'm going to say, because if she starts swinging, she's like right around there. She can hit me right in the, you know.
Well, he's agreeing to debate Alyssa Milano, but not Lori Lightfoot yet.
I don't know that would be a wise decision. That would not go well.
I'd avoid her if I were him.
Yeah, I saw him in the debates. I think, when Trump mopped the floor with him, without any facts.
No problem.
I think it's going to have a problem with Lori Lightfoot. But anyway.
Alderman Riley, I was just saying, though, and during the break here, and it's worth mentioning, that the cops are doing a good job at getting the guns off the streets. We've had 7,500 guns taken off the streets so far this year, 20% increase over last year. That's a lot of guns, 7,500. And yet they keep coming illegally across the border.
Chicago cops are taking more guns off the street than any other police department in the country at a much greater rate.
Right.
The problem is it's super easy to drive 20 miles across a border and literally reload. So for every 10 guns the cops are taking off the street, we're probably seeing 20 replaced within mm-hmm. a day. So the suggestion that Chicago's laws are deficient and the police here aren't doing their job, I think, is ridiculous. And I agree with the mayor. Cruz should stick to Texas.
Well, and he's got a lot to look at there right now at
the
moment.
He sure does.
And Chicago gun laws are not... you can own a gun in Chicago. You can carry a gun in Chicago,
right?
If you're properly licensed and you've gone through a background check, theoretically.
Yep.
Although mm-hmm. I don't know how good the background checks are, but there are some issues with that, right?
There are some concerns
that they are not sufficient, but at least this is. But it has the same rules, and that is not. And again, I don't think that the fact that we have those gun laws in place that are similar to the rest of the country are making these streets less safe. I think what is making these streets less safe is what you just pointed to, which is people who don't have FOID cards or concealed carry cards or whatever, and they get their hands on a gun. And as I pointed out, and you know this as well as anybody, most of the people shot in this town, I would venture to say 4 out of 5, 8 out of 10, same number, who get shot in Chicago are shooting back at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
And a lot of our stats are driven by folks who know each other. A mm-hmm. lot of this
Correct.
Is relationship driven. A lot of it's gang driven.
Right.
And, the detectives have a hard time closing out these cases because no one cooperates. It's a really toxic mix of bad circumstance. But the bottom line is it is entirely too easy for criminals or folks who want to do wrong to obtain a firearm outside of the system when everyone else who's a law-abiding citizen is going through that system. So the fact you can drive a few extra miles and pick up guns, no questions asked.
Don't walk right back with them.
That's a real serious problem.
Driving somewhere, buying the gun, going through the background check, coming back 3 days later, whenever
right.
you come back, and then bring the gun,
right.
get the gun, whatever that is. Or going through the classes, or having a clean record, or any of those things,
right.
which are required. I don't, we are arguing at cross purposes here, and basically the pro gun argument, the NRA's argument, is one of don't touch anything,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't seem to make any sense.
No.
And I don't really hear a ton of people, I'm sure there are some, but I certainly have not heard it, and I don't agree with it, that, well, then no gun should be allowed in this country at all, which is not going to happen in the United States.
And that's not
there are
the
more
argument.
Guns than people.
That's not the argument. I'd say that most people who are construed as, quote, liberals, end quote, aren't looking to take away everyone's firearms. They want some reasonable regulations and safety provisions in place to make sure that the right people are getting these guns. I think whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, most reasonable people believe in background checks so we know who's getting these guns.
Right.
Do they have a history of mental illness? Have they caused other violent incidents? Those sorts of things we should know about before we're handing them the opportunity to potentially do, you know, devastating damage to a community.
Which is what the mayor was pointing out, I think, and a very fair point, I would say. But it all started with that Breitbart tweet. It was like Democrat-controlled cities, and this is what's going on. Then you saw conservative lawmakers just kind of take aim at the city. And so, some say she shouldn't have taken the bait, but I feel like there was enough out there that she stood up and said, here's some facts. She put out the graphs about where the guns are coming from, and it's fact-based discussion.
The right-wing talking points are, you know, if you're just looking at things through a black and white lens, it's easy to pick on big cities because, frankly, that's where all the people live, and that's where you have the highest incidence of poverty. Where there are high incidence of poverty, you're going to have higher incidence of violence. So, yeah, easy for someone to say, sitting in the middle of nowhere in Texas, that, you know, those big cities are the cause of all our problems. The big cities are what drive the country. And unfortunately, you know, the more people you have in one place, the more societal problems you have to deal with in that one place.
Well, it's them too. It's really easy to sit around and you know, when in your community, which is pretty homogeneous, I think to your point, and say, look at those people in that city, I get what they're doing. I understand what they're saying. Look at those people. Those people don't look like you. They don't act like you. Most of those people shouldn't be in this country, right? I mean, it is that us versus them thing, and it's gotten very naked. It used to be done on economic principle or on some sort of constitutional principle. Sure. It's no longer argued that way. Now it's totally argued of it's them versus us. It's a really dangerous place. It's very, very similar to what was going on in Europe in the... Well, in the last three centuries in Europe, you've had exactly the same thing happen, and then you've had catastrophe in each one of those centuries.
Yep.
So I don't want to be heading toward another catastrophe here in this hemisphere.
Amen.
So, all right, let's talk about the budget, because
uplifting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a happier notion. Well, all right, so Lori Lightfoot's speech, I thought was great and compelling, but there was not a lot of meat on the bone in terms of what we're going to be doing here.
Sure.
But she did, you know, she was honest, which I think you can be as, you know, first term mayor in the first couple of weeks, and you open up the ledger and
you're
go,
like,
holy crap!
And I really think there was that moment for her.
Oh, there sure was. In the transition period, actually, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the reasons I supported Mayor Lightfoot is I think she's going to be honest every day. You know, the purpose for the State of the City address, a lot of people, I think, expected that to be a roadmap of solutions to the crisis, when, in fact, that was really hitting the reset button and showing folks exactly what kind of trouble we're in, how we got here, and then give a kind of a broad menu of general ideas and concepts we could use a blend of to help balance this budget. But it's a staggering number, $838 million structural deficit for 2020. A big chunk of that sticker shock is coming from the way we actually calculate our structural budget deficit in Chicago. Up until this year, up until this mayor, we never counted long-term and pension liabilities against our operating budget. This year, we are. That's considered to be a more honest and transparent accounting practice. So that led to, you know, an extra $180 million or so being added to that tab. But a big chunk of this eye-popping number is coming from the state-mandated pension ramp, so that we're finally meeting those pension obligations at an actuarial-based number. That's a good $278-280 million of that $838 million gap. So,
how about you say that? What's the number again?
It's about $278 million.
So about a quarter of it.
Yeah, it's a substantial amount. And then on top of that, another $300+ million of this next year's structural deficit is driven by collective bargaining agreement obligations for cost of living increases, step salary increases, and these sorts of things that are built into those labor agreements.
But hasn't the whole thing, I don't want to get in the weeds. We're already way deep in the weeds, and I'm glad that you're doing it. And I'm not doing it
because
I'm the one who generally drags us into the weeds, and I'm like, I gotta get a tow truck. I can't get out of here.
Wait, you're not writing all these numbers down?
I was. Let me go back through. No, but the question I have is if the debt that $270 million number that we were dealing with every year that you weren't putting on the big number, still had to pay it. You were doing that because you could restructure. It was like a fantasy. You could always restructure the debt. Figure out a way to push it further and further and further down the road.
That's right.
But now we're kind of at the end of the ability to do that. So what? Because you've done it enough.
Yeah, the scoop and toss, these types of gimmicks that would buy us extra time, push it off. That actually ended under the last administration, and Mayor Lightfoot has made it clear moving forward, she's going to stick to the same game plan, which is that we're not going to be kicking that can further down the road for the next generation of taxpayers to deal with. So
it's basically going and getting another credit card is what it is. That's the best way to put it, if you've got a bunch of debt on your credit card and it's getting onerous, you get another credit card, move it all over to that, and you're hoping that you're getting the 6-month float of no interest.
So you imagine you have a credit card where you're paying 25% interest and you find one that'll only charge you 10.
Right.
That's what we've been doing here for a very long time.
Right.
And we have to service that debt too. So that's also costing taxpayers a lot of money.
So you have the situation where you mentioned the COLA, the cost of living increases, that it seems like the mayor was trying to say, hey, your pensions are guaranteed. I don't want to touch those. This is not something that we're going to negotiate with. We're not going to bargain around that, but that these cost of living increases might be something to talk about. The Governor Pritzker doesn't seem willing to entertain that at all.
Now, I get the sense from the governor and the legislative leaders in Springfield that they're going to abide by the last Illinois Supreme Court decision, which effectively said these are contracts and you can't go in there and re-engineer them. I am not as familiar with where the mayor was coming from on that comment, but she may be talking about moving forward with new hires
right.
in these systems. That would be constitutional so long as the collective bargaining units, the labor unions, sign off on that. Typically, the way these contract negotiations work is to get something, you have to give something. So perhaps for the labor unions to give up that COLA, which would be near and dear to their hearts, that's built into that pension, they would probably want to see consideration on higher salaries for their starting employees, these sorts
mm-hmm.
of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that the labor team, there's a bunch of lawyers at City Hall that handle this stuff, will plow into as they go into these negotiations. But those are the kinds of things. There always has to be give and take. There will never be a zero-sum winner in a collective bargaining agreement. It always is kind of a mixed bag
mm-hmm.
when you're done with that.
Makes sense.
So the idea here is that over the next 2 months, she's going to take public comment and go around and ask people what they think. I have found generally that gets you nowhere because everybody's got a different answer and everybody's
sure.
got, you know, she does at some point, you know, she will have to be the person heavy as the head that wears the crown, right?
Yeah, of course.
So she's going to have to be the one that makes these decisions and presents them to you guys in the legislature to decide how you're going to go, Alderman. So
that's right.
I appreciate what she said, but let's just move along with this idea. I mean, having a bunch of, you know, town halls about this, unless she's got some banker types and other, you know, financial investment gurus that can somehow figure out better structures.
I think the purpose of the public town hall meetings is one, to get the mayor out there in front of these communities that elected her, but also for, you know, she's not just going to be taking advice from these four town hall meetings. She's triple tracking advice taking right now. She is meeting with finance people. She's meeting with small groups of aldermen for our ideas. I think the public piece is to hear from people in their own words what they're struggling with in their neighborhoods. If they had to make a choice on a cut, what would
it be? It's the same 10 people at every meeting.
Well, it may be.
You know that.
My problem, Rose, it's not 10 people at my meetings. It's like 1,000 people.
Very engaged community. That's what we want.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There are two aldermen in this town that everyone shows up.
That's true.
Everyone's a stakeholder. And half of those people are lawyers.
Some of them don't even live in the area, find out later. It's like, what are you speaking up
right.
for?
Or professional negotiators or they own 60% of the real estate in the ward.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck to all of you. Well, it was something.
I wish us luck.
All right. Well, good
pass
luck.
CBD, please.
Right. Well, marijuana cannot get here fast enough.
January 1st? Is that what's going on?
What are we getting at?
September.
And the sports gambling. Where's my sports gambling?
You just got a couple more months you got to wait there, right?
Oh, God.
You're gonna be gambling and smoking before you know
it. I'm telling you, January 2 is going to be my favorite day of the year. Thank you.
Can't wait.
Alderman, appreciate it.
Thanks, Alderman Riley.
Brendan Riley, 42nd Ward here in the city of Chicago.